Innovative Memory Systems versus Micron. And I might ask you, Mr. Morris, and we won't count this against your time, so you come up, but people listening might be wondering, this is an unusual situation where we've got four separate cases, four separate docket numbers today, and they've got the same name. So maybe you could begin, and as I said, we won't count against your time, by talking for a couple minutes how we got here. I mean, why we're here, how many... each case involves different patent claims, right?
Yes.
And they were based on separate IPRs that were filed with the PTAB?
That's correct. Our client sued Micron for patent infringement in the District of Delaware. We sued them on four different patents. Micron filed inter-parties reviews for all four, and in all four they were successful, and all four patents are currently...
So they filed separate IPRs for each... They filed an IPR for each of the patents.
Correct. Each one of these cases was one of those four IPRs, and I get the luck to do two in a row, just like Mr. Barbara will next.
Okay. And was the district court litigation stayed while these IPRs were decided?
Yes, Your Honor. The district court litigation was stayed. Both parties agreed to that stay. There were originally eight patents that we sued them on. Two of them we basically dedicated to the public because we essentially agreed with their construction at some level and the IPRs, and we didn't challenge those. Two of the others they did not institute for one reason or another. And so we were left with the four that were instituted, and the district judge in Delaware doesn't like to proceed on part of a case or not, and basically said, if you want to proceed, then I'm just going to deal with these two, and you can take the others out of the case. And so we all agreed we would just wait and see what happened. We went through the patent office's PTAB process.
And when you file separate, as your friends did on the other side, they filed four different petitions, same PTAB judges assigned to all of them, or do they all proceed on their separate merry ways?
In this case, we got the same panel, and we did the same thing that we're doing today when we went to Washington, and when us and our colleagues on the other side met down in Washington, we spent basically a day at the PTAB, and we were there for two or three hours, I think, where we did all four of the trials sequentially.
Okay.
I think there we broke it up and had lunch in between.
Okay. Well, thank you. We can start the clock running now. Thank you for that.
All right. May it please the court. I'm Robert Morris again on behalf of IMS. The title for this patent, the 849 patent, is the use of voids between elements and semiconductor structures for isolation. The craziness of some of this at some level is we're going to talk about Chen again. This time, Chen is and it's the same Chen. He is the inventor of the 849 patent. The abstract makes it clear that gas fills a void in between adjacent charge storage.
But well, before we get to that, can you line up what your legal issue is here? Is
okay.
It's not claim construction, right? Or is it?
It's the same kind of murkiness at some level, Your Honor.
Well, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I saw at least the major issue here being whether or not there was a reasonable expectation for success.
That is a big part of where the case is.
Okay.
The substantial evidence is a big part of this. I mean, what did the prior art show? What did it say? What did it teach? In our view, there's not even a scintilla of evidence, nevertheless, substantial evidence to support the obviousness finding. The 849
patent... Because the prior art elements were... The elements of the invention weren't included in the prior art, or because there was no motivation to combine or no reasonable expectation of success?
Well, it's interesting. During the trial, I think it was Judge Arpin admitted that he had no reference that showed the claimed 5-to-1 or 8-to-1 aspect ratios that were involved. So this has to do with memory cells, and over time, as everything happens, you know, Moore's law, everything shrinks, everything gets smaller. As it gets smaller, sometimes everything has to get higher. Our expert testified that at some point in time you hit a problem. The conventional deposition technique is to use chemical vapor deposition. It's a conformal technique. It lays down nice, even layers. And you could do that. And that's what the prior art says. Takeuchi says you can do that. I'm just trying to make sure I don't get the references mixed up here. Takeuchi says you can do that, and Takeuchi discloses that sometimes when you do that, you get voids between the cells. And Takeuchi, the only thing he describes and discloses is that it happens at ratios maxing out at 3-1. Okay? And so as technology moves forward, and I discussed this at trial, as technology moves forward and everything gets more condensed and the heights of the cells in relation to the width between the cells change, then that aspect ratio goes higher and higher and higher. And our expert, Dr. Paul Ho, testified, and it's unrebutted, that you hit this point in time where conformal processes don't work anymore. Because now you have to use a non-conformal process in order to get the dielectric down into the area between the two towers, of the two gated layers of elements. You have to use a physical deposition technique like PECVD, plasma enhanced chemical vapor deposition, or you have to use sputtering. Because with those techniques, during the process, you can actually direct where you want the stuff deposited rather than a conformal process where the deposition process is just applied in a uniform manner.
Okay, so where does... I was going to probably ask the same question, which was that I understand what you're saying here about the technology, and I think it relates to your reasonable expectation of success argument. Am I correct in
That's
understanding
correct.
That?
That's correct.
And so I was just curious, what is the standard of review that our court should apply to a reasonable
substantial evidence?
So it's a fact question.
Yes.
And we're supposed to look at whether there's substantial evidence to support the board's finding on the issue?
Yes. Yeah. There is no substantial evidence to support the board's finding.
What's the difference between motivation and reasonable expectation of success?
The motivation to combine is whether at some level they're hinged together, but the motivation to combine is whether or not a person of ordinary skill in the art would even come up with the idea in the first place, and then it has to have a reasonable expectation of success that it'll succeed in order to satisfy all of that.
I've got to check. Maybe I'm wrong about this. My recollection is we don't see that many cases that involve exclusively reasonable expectation of success, so my vague recollection is that most of those cases arise in the pharmaceutical area. Because they say, 10 different scientists have been doing this experiment for 15 years, and nobody thought that there was going to be a... So those are the kinds of issues I recall seeing with regard to reasonable expectation of success. This seems a little out there. Am I wrong about that?
That may very well be true. That's out of my wheelhouse.
So you're saying this invention
involves... I'm a double E in computer science person.
I'm sorry. You're saying this invention involves use of non-conformal coverage... And no one would have thought to do that conformal coverage was used in the prior art, but not non-conformal coverage? Is that...
Well, the testimony of Dr. Ho...
That's not a trick question. I just am really trying to understand whether that's real.
Essentially, okay. What's disclosed in the 849 patent, when the 849 patent talks about the invention, the core of the invention, essentially, is he says in order... Chen and Fang, actually... They talk about the fact that in order to achieve the voids, when you have the higher aspect ratios of 5-1, 8-1, or even higher, that you have to use a different process to put down the materials that has to be lower than traditional than the traditional methods that are used. And he says that on Appendix 482. Column 7, line starts at line 20, and it's basically that whole paragraph, that the dielectric layer can be formed with voids 47 by depositing an oxide with lower pressures and temperatures than normally are used to deposit oxide layers, such in a low-pressure chemical vapor deposition process. So even though that's called a low-pressure chemical vapor deposition process, what Chen, on my side this time, is saying is that you need even lower pressures in order to be able to get the materials, the dielectric, where you want it, in order to form that void in between the gate towers.
One of the problems I'm having with your argument is that I think that you admitted that the claims are not limited to a conformal or non-conformal process. And in fact, they say nothing about you know preferring non-conformal. Am I correct about that?
Oh, that's absolutely correct.
And what about that the specification says that many different processes could be used to make the voids?
It can. I mean, and many different processes are, as long as they're physical vapor deposition. Those are the processes, those are some of the processes that it lists. And it says you can use whatever process you want as long as you have lower than normal low pressure chemical vapor deposition. And if you use, our expert testified, and it was unrebutted, that in order to get lower than low pressure chemical vapor deposition, you have to use physical vapor deposition processes. And if you're using physical vapor deposition processes, they are, by definition, nonconformal.
Aren't you making a reasonable expectation of success argument?
Yes, I said that
okay,
was part
and
of...
That's really the crux of your argument.
Yes, that in many ways is the crux of the argument. Because as as Judge Arpin had said at trial, none of the prior art shows or teaches or suggests in any way, and he says, I don't have a single reference that teaches a 5-to-1 ratio that's claimed. I don't have a single reference that teaches the 8-to-1. So how do I get there? And he asked Mr. Barbara. And Mr. Barbara just said, well, you do. And that's pretty much what he said. And at some level, they rely on the distance that's between the cells in Lee. But Lee doesn't talk about height at all. And because Lee doesn't talk about height at all, there's nothing about aspect ratios in anything that Lee teaches. Lee is like two pages of pie in the sky, I really wish that things were different. And Lee actually states within the patent itself that the answer, right, what is Lee teaching? Lee isn't teaching, oh, this would be obvious to do. He says, thus it is required at A870 that we should develop a new cell structure, such as a vacuum isolation of gate-to-gate spacing or very thin floating gate structure. Nothing about an aspect ratio, nothing about how any of this stuff is going to work, nothing about how you accomplish it. And I don't see how that could possibly meet the substantial evidence.
You're referring to the 8-1 aspect ratio. Isn't that a claim limitation? Isn't that a limitation in claim 5?
Yes.
And wasn't there some dispute, maybe I'm wrong, but or some argument that you waived the ability to make that argument because you didn't include it? And you never called out the specific limitation of claim 5? I may have this confused with another case.
I don't understand how I could waive an argument that limitations in a claim don't matter. But I'll take a
I'm
look at that.
I'm talking specifically about claim 5.
Yes, I'll take a look at that while Mr. Barbara speaks, and then I'll take the rest of my
time. Well, I guess you can answer it by just saying, is that an argument about claim 5 and the 8-1 aspect ratio?
I don't think we waived any such thing.
Was it made before the board, my question was?
Sure.
Was it?
What's that?
Was that argument made before the board, the argument with regard to the limitation of claim 5 on the 8-1 aspect ratio?
I believe that it was. I believe we talked about... I mean, Judge Arpin specifically asked and specifically talked about, I don't have a reference that shows the claimed 8-to-1. We wouldn't have had that discussion if it was at trial, if it wasn't part of what we were stating. So I don't see how we could have waived that.
Okay. Right.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jared Bobrow for Micron. As Your Honors noted, the issues on appeal are quite narrow. There's really only one, whether the Board's finding of reasonable expectation of success is based upon substantial evidence. There was some discussion about the teachings of voids. Certainly there's no dispute that the prior art teaches voids. Nor is there any dispute.
Do I understand correctly that the dispute is that they say, yeah, the prior art has voids, but they didn't want to create those voids. They saw them as defects.
So I don't think that is the dispute. And certainly Takeuchi shows how to and says to create the voids and has an embodiment in figure 16 that does just that. Sato, in addition, is intentionally creating those voids because Sato is saying that having a void between these two gates is a great way to reduce parasitic capacitance because, Sato says, that the dielectric constant of air, or of the void, is less than the dielectric constant of the dielectric itself. So as a result, you get a reduction. So Sato was going out of his way to create those voids, and that's shown in figure 9b of the patent, of the Sato patent. So the issue here, and there was just some discussion about aspect ratios, there's actually no dispute that the combination of Sato and Lee and the combination of Takeuchi and Lee teaches the 5-to-1 and 8-to-1 aspect ratios that are claimed. That's actually conceded in IMS's blue brief at page 38. There's no dispute that the combination does that. There's also no dispute about motivation to combine, another subject that came up in the first part of the argument.
No, I think we've all agreed that the dispute is over or not whether or not there would have been an expectation, reasonable expectation of success. So why don't you focus it on why there would have been a reasonable expectation of success?
Thank you, Your Honor. There certainly was a reasonable expectation of success here, and the board's findings are well supported.
Point to the record and show us where the board found. Show us the substantial evidence.
Yes. So, Your Honor, first of all, I would direct your attention to page 30, for example, where the board noted that Takeuchi and Sato both teach the formation of voids between electrodes. That's at appendix pages 30 and appendix page 50. In both of those places, at oral argument, counsel conceded that both of those prior art references teach the formation of voids in between these gate structures. Second, the references themselves, as I alluded to earlier, and the board described these, show voids between these gate structures. I direct your honor to appendix pages 22 and 23 for the discussion of Takeuchi and appendix pages 43 to 44 where the board discussed how Sato showed that there were voids present. Third, I direct your honor to pages...
Going back to page 22, is there a particular language there that you want us to focus on? Because the key issue in this case is there substantial evidence? So it might be good to walk us through and show us exactly what parts, where that substantial evidence is that you're relying on.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think at pages 22 to 23, there was discussion that at the bottom that is discussed further below, it says, very bottom of the page, running over to 23, the challenged apparatus claims do not recite how the voids are formed, but only that they are present. So it's essentially saying the claims aren't limited to voids. And that, and then turning to page 27, there's a further discussion of voids where the board expressly credits Dr. Baker's testimony that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have found that voids are more easily provided when the aspect ratio is high. So we have a discussion at page 27 that expressly says and relies upon Takeuchi for the finding that voids are easier to form when the aspect ratio is high. Dr. Baker testified to that, and again at page 27 in the top half of the page, the board refers to Dr. Baker's testimony at paragraph 96. Then again at appendix page 27, the board refers to the Takeuchi, specifically at column 16, lines 21 to 27. And then further, that finding that it is easier to form voids when the aspect ratio is higher is also supported by the Fulford reference, which is the citation to exhibit 1018, also on appendix page 27. In each of those instances, there is evidence that says that, sure, we have in Takeuchi a showing of an aspect ratio of 3-to-1, but if that's increased, it's actually easier to form the voids. And that's consistent with, of course, common sense. If I have a void that is skinny and tall, and I have material coming from up top being deposited, it's going to be harder to essentially fill that structure than it is if it's short and wide. It's harder to form a void when the aspect ratio is low. And so Takeuchi says exactly that. Increase the aspect ratio, and it says voids are easily formed in the dielectric between the gate electrodes.
So your answer to the question of whether or not there was a reasonable expectation of success seems to be that, yeah, because all these prior art references were already doing this.
Exactly. They were doing it, and they said it's easier to do this, creating a void, at the aspect ratio when it's higher, which, again, is consistent with the expert testimony of Dr. Baker. It's consistent with the prior art that we cited ourselves. That's the basis for a reasonable expectation of success. I would add that if you flip the equation over after we presented our case, the rebuttal case that IMS put on simply fails to diminish that showing in any way. Number one, because the claims don't require any particular process. You can call it conformal, you can call it nonconformal, you can call it PVD or PECVD. Nothing in the claims limits them to a process. And so however you form the voids, whether the Takeuchi reference did it by waving a magic wand, I mean, it doesn't matter. The voids were there, and there was an explanation for how the voids got there. And then similarly, and number two, Dr. Ho, IMS's expert, didn't say that a conformal process was needed to form a void at these aspect ratios. That's not what he said. What he said was that you need that to form voids consistently and reproducibly, that there is some consistency notion because it was acknowledged that using these other processes, and he had to acknowledge it because Takeuchi and Sato use low-pressure CVD, and I think what's called ordinary pressure CVD, and they show voids. So he simply said...
Do I understand correctly that the prior art, or just generally it was known to use both conformal and non-conformal processes?
Yes, and I believe that that was admitted at the transcript. It's cited at appendix page 31, I believe. These processes were known, and again, whether you call them conformal or something else is I think, a different issue. But it's clear that the processes that IMS was calling nonconformal were known. And there was testimony that plasma-enhanced chemical vapor deposition was a known technique. These were not mysterious, and the board made a particular finding that, indeed, these processes were known. They, of course, could be used to do this technique, and the patent says that. But the patent nowhere says that you absolutely have to use these. It says that voids can be formed in that way, but saying that something can be done in a particular way doesn't mean that it has to always be done in that way in order for it to work. The specification doesn't say that plasma-enhanced CVD or physical vapor deposition, sometimes called PVD, that those techniques are required or necessary or essential or anything like that. It says they can be used. It says, by way of illustration, here's what we did. And that is not a statement that in any way narrows or requires that a particular process be used. Now, in the reply
Does it matter whether or not using the nonconformal deposition process achieves a consistent result?
Your Honor, I missed the very first part of what you said. I apologize.
Yeah, does it matter whether or not the nonconformal deposition process achieves a consistent result?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. As long as the prior art demonstrates an expectation of success some of the time, it needn't show that you always succeed using, again, what IMS is calling a conformal process. There's nothing in the law that says that every time you do something, it has to occur in a particular way to have rendered something obvious or to show reasonable expectation. Certainly, the board made its findings. The board rejected the argument that somehow a nonconformal process was needed for the various reasons that we've been discussing. But there certainly isn't a requirement of consistency or reproducibility.
I was just going to ask, I mean, I looked at your expert's testimony, Dr. Baker, and I don't see where he expressly addressed reasonable expectation of success. Am I correct in understanding that?
I think that he did address that in the context of discussing what I think earlier was described as a link between motivation and reasonable expectation. So when he was talking about the kinds of results that you would achieve and how it's easier to form the voids in high aspect ratio features, he was discussing that when he was talking about combining the references. So
what page would you identify for where you think that even though he's not using the words reasonable expectation of success, you think he is in fact addressing that?
Your Honor, I would address your attention to appendix page 674. Which is paragraph 71 of Dr. Baker's declaration, and also appendix page 689, which is where paragraph 96 begins. And in those paragraphs, in each of them, he is discussing the straightforward concept that it is easier to form a void in a material when you have a high aspect ratio as compared to a low aspect ratio. And so that is a discussion of expectation of success, even if that particular phrase wasn't used.
And so you don't think it's required that an expert actually talk about, you know, the legal concepts of reasonable expectation of success in order to be able to show that these claims would have been obvious?
I don't think that the expert needs to use the magic legal words. I think the expert needs to set forth the opinion with the underlying expertise and corroborating evidence in most cases to show that's the case, that it is indeed easier to form a void, for example, than when it's at a high aspect ratio than not. I think that's sufficient under the law. One issue came up in the reply brief, which I would like to address very briefly on this issue, because in the reply, and I believe it's at reply page 7, IMS took the position that Takeuchi only describes creating a void between what it calls,
your side is bound and determined to get the last word right on the surreply. This is your surreply? Okay.
So with apologies for the oral surreply, if I may, at reply page 7, there is an assertion by IMS that Takeuchi only describes a void between the gate electrode. This is, I believe, towards the top of the page. Mm-hmm. And then it says, in effect, i.e., the control gate and not the floating gate. And that is an issue that is simply incorrect. Takeuchi teaches the formation of voids between what it calls the gate electrodes, but the gate electrode is not confined to the control gate. Takeuchi, and this is at appendix page 857, column 8, lines 22.
Well, I know you're telling us this, but it's kind of hard to have a surreply. And then did the board say anything about this issue? Can you point us something in the board decision that clarifies this?
I'm sorry to interrupt, Your Honor. I apologize. No, the board did not. This is an issue that came up only in reply about where the voids are positioned, and I simply wanted to address it because Takeuchi does teach the formation of the claimed void in the specific area that is being discussed. So the IMS was saying Takeuchi doesn't teach it because it's only between the control gate, but the gate electrode includes both the floating gate and the control gate, column 8, lines 22 to 34. So clearly it creates it at that location. Unless Your Honors have any other questions, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Please.
Your Honors, one more time. Again, limited time. So one of the really important points that I want to make is that the board's decision is based on technology and analysis that they did completely and totally on their own, which is improper under Quozo, under like so many different cases. If you look at Appendix 31, the board says, perhaps most importantly, patent owners' contentions regarding conformal and nonconformal processes are based on the flawed presumption, namely that the dielectric must be deposited on the sidewalls of the spaces between the adjacent layers. Micron never put that out. It's not in the petition. It wasn't in the argument. It's something that Judge Arpin kind of came up with on his own. And as he says in the final written decision, that's perhaps most importantly in our decision. It's improper. It for that reason alone, this has to be sent back to the board on remand, because it's just not, it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable under the law. Second,
you mean just, so? Where do they go astray? Are they misstating what they call your flawed presumption, or was that your presumption, and they're making up why they saying it's flawed?
Every single embodiment in the 849 patent, every single embodiment in every single piece of prior art, they all have dielectric on the walls. There's nothing, not a single scintilla of evidence, not a single thing on the record that comes up with this idea that, you know what, you really don't have to deposit the dielectric on the
walls. But it's not in the claim, right? Do I understand correctly that that's not specifically required by the claim?
To deposit dielectric on the walls? No, that's not in the claim. On the other hand, you still have to read the specification, or you have to read the claims in light of the specification. The concept that the board went off on its own and did some scientific analysis and based its determination of obviousness on a position that's not in the petition, was never put forth by Micron, is just flat out improper. They just can't do that. They have to make their...
I know we've got a lot of cases here and the rest of this week. Did you ask for reconsideration on this basis before the board?
No. No, we did not. With regard to reasonable expectation of success, Mr. Barbara just sat here and he discussed the fact that, well, if the prior art says you can do it every now and then that's good enough, and I don't understand how that's possible. If the whole purpose of a patent is to intentionally put voids, how could a person of ordinary skill in the art have a reasonable expectation of success if sometimes you do it and sometimes you don't? That means that we're going to be using products that sometimes work and sometimes don't, and that's ridiculous. That can't be the law. It can't be the law can't be a reasonable expectation of success is met as long as you do it once, as long as by accident the prior art says, you know what, sometimes I get it. And Takeuchi in specific doesn't want them. He doesn't want voids. When Chen came up with this invention, it was because nobody wanted voids at the time. And him and a couple of other people then started to figure out, you know what, the opposite might be true. If we start putting voids in there, we can get rid of the cross-coupling between the memory cells. But Takeuchi wasn't one of those people. He came up with two different techniques to avoid voids. And how could that provide a reasonable expectation of success to put them in place in the technology?
Before you sat down, Chief Judge Prost had asked you a question about Claim 5 and whether that argument had been made before the board. Did you have anything that you wanted to add in response to that
question? I didn't
get
a chance to get the pinpoint site because I don't have all of the – I just didn't have every one of the briefs with me. But as I said, during oral argument, that claim limitation was discussed. It was brought up at the board. Dr. – if you look at Appendix 464 to 466, there's a discussion, and Judge Arpin says, Counselor, and he's talking to Mr. Bobrow, following up on Judge Cherry's question, though, isn't it aspirational? And he's talking about Lee. Isn't that a pie-in-the-sky dream? I'm left with a situation where I have no piece of prior art that describes 5-to-1. I have no piece of prior art that describes 8-to-1 specifically, and you're telling me that it's not a range issue, even though those are claim limitations. And it seems like you're arguing that this is just something you should do. And Bob Brow responds, and then Judge Cherry uses, I believe, those exact words, that it's aspirational. And he says, I think the question here, is there a reasonable expectation that you would succeed? Would a person of ordinary skill in the art be motivated such that they would think they have a reasonable expectation of success when none of the prior art tells you how to get there?
I understand. Can I just direct your attention for a minute to page A38? That's the board's opinion, and it says, patent owner does not contend that dependent claim 5 is separately patentable, but instead relies on its contentions with respect to its base claim, claim 2. So it sounds as if the opinion is suggesting that claim 5 was not separately argued as being patentable.
I'm not familiar with the exact page, so I just don't have a response for you. All I know is that the claims were talked about in that regard. And just my final point is Mr. Bobber talked about Dr. Baker's testimony. Dr. Baker, sure enough, gave his declaration, and then I deposed him, and he melted like chocolate on a hot summer day, and he never came back. He never came back. And that's important, because when you're looking at the substantial evidence, what do we have? And we have Dr. Ho's unrebutted testimony that in order to have a reasonable expectation of success at 5-1 and 8-1, you have to use nonconformal processes, even though that's not in the claim. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank both sides, and the case is submitted.